Welcome to the Bowers & Wilkins webcast with your hosts, Peter Madueno and Seth Snyder.
Welcome again to the Bowers & Wilkins podcast. I am Pete. Again, we have Seth. How are you doing today, Seth?
I'm doing well, Pete. How's it going?
I'm doing excellent. So today we have a very, very special podcast for everybody. Why don't you tell them a little bit about it, Seth?
We're very lucky today because we have a new band that we're going to talk to. The band's called Ghost Leota, and it's kind of a super group. I don't know if they approve of that that title, but all of them have worked with so many different artists in their own professional careers that to not call them a super group. I mean, sorry, man, it's what you are. This is Ghost Leota. The members of this group have worked with everyone from, you know, Kanye West to Gnarls Barkley to Norah Jones, and even one of them is a member of Tenacious D. Has been playing bass with them for years. So it's a wide variety of different musical backgrounds, and this is like a little experiment that they started running with electronic music. So it's a lot of fun. They're cool dudes, and they love good speakers. And they wanted to talk to us both about good speakers and their new album that's coming out on the 21st, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a really interesting situation. I mean, just talking to them, you could see there was definitely four different styles coming together. And what was interesting is that they didn't actually come together. They kind of were all recorded in their own respective areas and the respective cities, and they kind of just did it like they kind of go in through it and talk about how they recorded being apart from each other. And that was a really, really interesting thing during this whole corona situation. I wonder if this is going to be
I definitely got a lesson on modern day recording practices for sure. I kind of got schooled. And it was awesome to talk to these guys. They're really cool, and I really look forward to their album. I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, so let's dive right in.
Today we have a fun group of guests. I got a room full of faces staring at me on my monitor right now. The band Ghost Leota, a new band full of musicians who have worked with everyone that you've ever heard of and ever listened to, it seems from their bios. It's fun to get to talk to the whole reason that we make speakers is for all the content and the great music that you guys put through. So what's up, guys? You want to introduce yourself? Go around the horn with starting with Christopher.
Hey, Christopher Ray. Good to meet y'all.
Yeah, we also have John Spiker.
Yo.
Nice. And keep going around. We also have James McAllister.
Hey, thanks for having us on the podcast.
Of course. And of course, did I get Zach Ray? Where are you at, Zach?
Zach Ray, no relation to Christopher Ray.
Yeah. So you guys have some new stuff coming out, some new material that you've been working on for a little bit. What can you tell us about the new venture that the four of you have started?
Who wants to take that one?
I'll take it because I'm the newest member of the band.
Get on, bud.
Basically, I think this is one of those things that I don't know that any of this started as like, hey, we got to start a band and let's like get together and make a record in band. And it wasn't really, I think it's a little more like accidental than that, it was kind of one of those things where, from my perspective of it, was like these guys getting together in a room and just basically like playing for hours and, you know, recording everything. And I think it basically became one of those things that probably exists on a lot of people's hearts, just like this sort of scary thing that was like many, many hours of great recorded music, but that needed sort of like, you know, sifted through somebody to like listen to it and kind of like, you know,
somebody to dig through the archives. Got it.
Yeah. And I think it was basically like this like raw, awesome thing that just, it was all this organic thing that it wasn't this thing of like, here's the songs we wrote, everyone learn the tunes and here's the charts and let's go in and do 10 takes and we'll pick the best take and comp it together. It was more just, let's let, you know, accidents happen and sort of things fall into place as they will. And so then my role was just kind of coming in and sifting and just kind of being, you know, taking that off of those guys' plates of the the thankless task of sort of listening to 8 hours of recorded music and sort of.
At what point in those 8 hours do you finally realize that stuff is clicking, or was that something you guys?
Well, no, that's kind of the Chris brought over this hard drive, and with very little insight or direction as to like what the project was or what they hoped it would be, was just like, here's a hard drive. There's some stuff we recorded. Open it up and see what it is, kind of thing. And
here's some stuff.
Like, could you turn it into some like 6 minute songs or like a couple of 2 minute songs? It was like, what is this? It could have been 1 8-hour song. You know, it was like that thing of like, I don't think anyone knew what it was. So it was that sort of exciting thing of like everyone, us collectively uncovering what the hell.
No, it makes sense. Here's our hard drive. We don't think it sucks. Go figure out whether or not it does.
That was kind of the exciting part. Was like, I know, you know, from what I do, like, I never get that kind of freedom to just like, here's some stuff, no references, no, we love this record, make it sound like this. Just here's a thing we did, and what is it, kind of thing.
I think that's honestly too why Spiker is a member of the band. Like, He's not an engineer on the project. He's not like, he doesn't just fill some technical role. I mean, like, major creative decisions were made by Spiker on how these arrangements kind of needed to come into focus. And I love the idea of having somebody in the band that wasn't actually in the room during the like recording process. I think that I think it's kind of a cool thing that should happen more often, actually.
Yeah, it seems like a very like current way of making music in that, you know, in the COVID days here where we're not necessarily all like piling into rooms together. It was a fascinating thing of like, I had no memories of like, oh man, I remember like 10 minutes in, there was this thing that happened. So I had no predisposition of like what I was hoping to find or take out of it. It was just kind of this like discovery.
Yeah, it is interesting, and you hit the you know, the elephant in the room. How do you make music during COVID? It's a strange thing that, you know, you guys seem to have figured it out. What are the difficulties on that front, since y'all can't necessarily be in the same room?
We haven't really faced it yet. We haven't made any music during with each other. You know, during this thing. I mean, I think we've all made music with other people, and I think, you know, I've done some sessions. James Spiker, I know you just had one at the Village that looked kind of weird. So like, there's still things going on. We haven't, I think we'll be getting into a room together in the next month or so to make something new, but yeah, I mean, it is a challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine. So so tell us about this new record. What when's this coming? When can we hear from it? What can we expect? That whole spiel.
Well, we're gonna hit you with the link later on today, a YouTube live link. We're gonna do a live stream album release on Thursday night at seven p.m. Pacific time, where we'll be streaming the whole album. We're trying to do it in a way where it'll be, you know, hi-fi for those that tune in. So it's not just going to be played off of speakers, but people can actually like sit at home with their systems or put their headphones on and vibe out. And we'll be answering questions and chatting afterwards. And I think we're planning on like getting to some questions too in real time, like through the comments, you know what I mean? Like section.
Cool.
So yeah, that's going to happen on Thursday. And then on Friday, the album releases.
That's awesome.
The whole thing will be out.
Yeah. And you're on the Bowers and Wilkins podcast. You mentioned it's a hi-fi thing. How did we get hooked up? This is our first time meeting. So pleasure to meet all four of you.
Yeah.
But how did we get hooked up through other elements of my company and your band? How did you guys get introduced to the Bowers and Wilkins world?
I have been working on Bowers and Wilkins speakers for about 8 years. I worked for a film composer named James Newton Howard, and his whole studio had nothing but B&Ws and Class A amps. Like, that was all that was in every room at his spot. And I fell in love with the sound. Like, I love what you guys are doing. And I reached out to Danny Haken when he was with you all six years ago, I guess. And that was kind of my first introduction into working with you guys directly as a company. Whenever we worked on this album, I referenced all of the masters on my 805 D2s. I reference everything on those speakers. Like, even if I mix on something else, or if somebody else mixes on something else, everything ends up going through those before I'm like, okay, it's good to go. So whenever we were releasing this album, I thought, I'll just reach out to B&W and see if they want to be a part of this and team up in some cool way. And Eric has really made that happen. And the whole team over there, like, you guys are awesome. James, Andy Kerr, I mean, everybody's like so rad. I mean, it's you guys have a cool thing going on.
Yeah, we you make it easy for us, because at the end of the day, like, we just try to stay out of your way. So you're the one doing the cool, you're the one making the music. I mean, all we're doing is trying to reproduce it. What about 805 D2's work for you? Because we're going to have a bunch of different people listen to this podcast, people who, you know, who know hi-fi but know nothing about the recording process. One of them's right here. Like, I've never, you know, experienced work. What about Diamonds or Bowers in general makes the recording process easier, makes it more advantageous to use those monitors? Like, what is it? What's the secret sauce? So
I was spoiled early on, because what we were working at J&H Studios were the 800 Diamonds, and then the 802 Diamonds were in the back room. So I got spoiled early on the big boys. And then for my home rig, I got the 805s, so that I could hear, like, I basically had a smaller system mirroring what we had at J&H Studios. And what immediately got me that I love about them is the soundstage is gigantic, like like IMAX size gigantic. And then the only way I can describe it when working on them is, like, the detail is so precise. It's almost like you can hear behind the sound. It's like my hi-hat sounds exactly the way that I want it to sound, and then I can place it exactly where I want it to sit in the image.
Yeah.
Which I mean, there's a lot of great monitors out there. I think we all use different stuff. Like, I don't think any of us in the band use the same monitor. We're all using different things. But yeah, like I said, everything that I do I end up listening to it through the 805s for that reason, just to hear where everything's sitting.
Gotcha. Yeah. You start to get that three dimensional sound out of a two dimensional space, that magic of stereo, so to speak.
So. Yeah, and I listened to this podcast that Andy Kerr did with the Cobas guy. I can't remember his name. Mark, yeah. Maybe.
David Solomon, yeah.
And in that podcast, Andy talked about how he would play music. I can't remember what speaker at Bowers you guys were playing it through, but they do these things where kids come in and, like, have this hi-fi experience. And Andy said that kids would, like, start reaching out, like, trying to touch. Like, they, because it's so real, you know what I mean? And it's so big and so detailed that kids would, like, reach out and try to touch the image, because it sounds like it's coming from in front of them and it's from these two speakers, you know what I mean? I think that's a super powerful thing. And all of us are definitely, like, you know, I don't know if you want to say hi-fi nerds, but fidelity is important to all of us. I mean, we make music for a living, so we want people to hear our music the way that we want them to hear it, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny, our engineers, there's video of our engineer saying that exact same thing, where we just wanted people to experience the music the way we think it should be heard. But yeah, it's funny, you said you don't consider yourselves hi-fi. I don't think anybody's really born a hi-fi nerd. You have to be made that way. Either your parents had it or you experienced it. Like, I got mine. I walked into a really expensive store with no money in college. Guy took one look at me in my Pantera t-shirt and was like, there's no way this guy has any money. But he was nice enough to sit me down in front of a big stack and melt my face off. And everything changed at that moment. So I'm glad you had that experience with a pretty accomplished composer too, when you had that experience. That's awesome. So, but yeah. Do the rest of these guys get to work on the 800s with you and the 805s, or is that your own personal?
You won't let us hear them. We've asked.
Gotcha.
He just tortures us. I had that with my dad. Is still a hi-fi enthusiast and had a very impressive setup in our living room when we were growing up. And I actually inherited, when I was probably about 13, I inherited a set of B&W speakers from him that I still have in my house, that I still use as my casual listening speakers. They're not probably, by modern standards, they're not considered the top of the line. They're fine speakers. And I still, to this day, come home from the studio, and after I've had enough of an ear break where I've sort of decompressed, I can listen to a mix on them and immediately sort of highlight all of the problems with it. And but yeah, it is something how you kind of have to be indoctrinated into the sort of the world of fidelity. And then once you're in, you kind of, once you've taken the blue pill, I guess it is, right?
I don't know. Blue or red.
it's whatever the pill is where you see it, and then all of a sudden you can't unhear it. You can't unsee it. And and I think I'm still having that experience. Thankfully I still have most of the frequencies in my hearing after 20 years of being a professional musician, but I'm still hearing things where I listen to records that I hadn't listened to on a really great set of speakers ever. Put it on and you go, oh wow, okay, man, I noticed that sound, or I never noticed the tone of that reverb, or I never noticed the placement of the elements within the feel. It shouldn't
happen. Like it's the same recording. It should, in theory, it should be there, but you always end up, even if it's the same record you've been listening to for years, there's just those moments where you're paying attention, and if the speakers can reproduce those real subtleties, you get to have that emotional experience and connection to that music all over again, which is so much fun.
And I think the big thing too is, especially as music creators, like if you're in your car, like you hear the song, you know what I mean? But when you have a hi-fi system at home, you hear choices, like you can hear the choices that the producer made that you might not have caught like in your car,
Yep.
To me, that's the real value. I mean, I put on albums or records like Zach said that I've heard a million times, and I hear something, I go, oh, that's what he was going for there. Oh, that's what, I didn't notice that that's what he did. You know what I mean? With the drums, like that's rad. Like you hear these choices, these creative decisions that were made in the studio. And that's, for me, that's like the most valuable thing about it.
No, it is you do open up the book. It's like a little window into what that artist was thinking at that time, and what that producer was working at that time, especially in today's world where there's so much music. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but there's so much music out there that is just absolutely pristine to the point that you don't hear any of those flubs or those mistakes. And I love that stuff. I love hearing those cuts where you get right in with a musician and you maybe hear something slide up that fretboard a little bit more aggressive than he probably wanted to. You hear a little bit of those times.
You'll love our record then.
Well, I feel like that's why this record is actually so, like, it makes so much sense to listen on, like, a fancy pair of speakers. Because when the guys were recording it, they had this mic. Zach, maybe explain it a little better, but there was a microphone in the room that was getting way over compressed, and it was basically picking up like every little chair squeak, every little like pin drop in the room. And rather than try and hide that in the recording, it's actually something we sort of like pushed up in front. And I think that sort of thing that Chris was saying of like wanting to reach out and like touch sounds, I think this whole record is kind of covered in that stuff of like, where a lot of electronic music can sound really isolated because it doesn't have any air around it, like real room tone and real like sound of human beings. This has a real like organic quality to it that like it, there are times when I'm listening on headphones to this record where it does feel like someone's like coming up behind you or something, because there's this like element of hearing the people in the room shifting and moving and like adjusting and being there. So to me, I haven't had the pleasure yet. I guess I have that pleasure Thursday, but I'm excited to hear this on something really detailed like that, to really like.
I was listening to some of the cuts today, and you guys were messing with my head spatially. So
yeah, good.
Yeah. It was awesome.
We try.
Well, Seth, that brings us to like, for this live stream, we're gonna be listening to it through 800D3s at Zach's studio.
And tell what other gear, you got a bunch of gearheads that are gonna be listening to this. So like, what else? Yeah, what other type of fun little toys you guys working with on that system?
So we'll have the Delta Mono Free, the two channels of that for the left and the right, and then we're also using the new Delta Mono Pre as well.
Dude, money. Those I have heard.
Did I say that right? Did I say pre twice? The Delta Mono amps will be on each side, and the Delta Mono Pre will be in the setup. Yeah,
that's awesome. I have many hours of experience on those amps, and they sure as shit'll hunt. Those are money amps. That's awesome. Very cool.
Class A and B and W is like a match made in heaven.
Yeah, you hear everything on that, whether you want to or not, which is so much fun. I mean, for those records where you want to hear all those little subtle details, it's all there, all the juiciness, and then all those things that maybe weren't the best choices but add to the experience. It comes back to that whole idea of, do you want to hear everything, or do you want to hear it, you know, the way it should have sounded in theory? And if you go to a concert and you're upset that, you know, it didn't sound like the CD, we can't be friends. Like, I wanted to hear something new and exciting. And that's very cool. I'm excited to give this new album a listen to. So
Seth, as a hi-fi, sorry. I was gonna say, as a hi-fi guy, like what in your guys' opinion is like the ultimate medium?
The ultimate medium?
Yeah. Like what's the best way to play something back? Is it vinyl still?
Oh, dude, I don't get into that game. I mean, at the end of the day, however you're listening to music, do it the best way that you can.
Yeah.
I'm 50-50. They're just different. And I'm like, forget it if you want me to choose. I refuse to. Right. I like them both.
Yeah. And do you mean that as in vinyl and digital? There's nothing else.
Yeah, right. Vinyl and digital. Like, I'm going one direction or the other. I mean, my favorite medium is right in front of you while you're playing it live, but you can't have that at home all the time.
Right.
So we try to just get as close to that live performance as you can. And if that's a digital way of doing it, that's the digital way is the interesting one for me, because I'm, you know, in my mid 30s. And when I was a kid, it was so much harder to get all of your music. You had to go and physically buy the CD. And if someone told 12-year-old Seth that, you know, someday he'd be able to pay $20 a month and have all the songs, you know, in the way they were intended to be heard right there. I mean, it's just so much fun to consume music right now. I don't know how it is on your end, the business side of it, but on the creative side, I'm sure it opens up a lot of doors and capabilities on that front. But
I have a question I wanted to throw out there, just in terms of, you were just talking about the hi-fi situation. Is there, my experience has been a great system actually can make a bad recording fun to listen to.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, is there ever any time, it's amazing because it helps. It almost makes an amazing recording, the pristine recording, sound more exciting. And then it also can make something really gnarly also more exciting. And even something that's flawed, I guess, technically can sound really cool. So yeah. It's an interesting, it's not like it's so, it's an interesting measurement of sound, you know, because it isn't.
Well, I think it allows. Like I think it allows you to get back to the fundamentals of it. Is the music you're listening to, or the recording, whether it be good or bad, or somewhere in the middle, is it good music? Because if it's good music, you'll just enjoy listening to it, because it's going to sound as good as it possibly can on a good system. So you stop worrying so much about, I don't like the way this track sounds, and I'm digging this track, it's cool. You know, it's back down to the, you know, the fundamentals of why you bought the speakers or why you bought the system in the first place.
Totally. So,
right. Yeah, I think
that's exciting.
I think that's what a good system. So, but on the flip side of that, from what you guys use it for, at our company, we're lucky to get to interact with you guys on a fairly regular basis. Not enough for a nerd like me, but we get to interact with you guys more often than not. And what if we can get a little technical now without snoozing everyone listening? What about
bring it on?
What makes it easier? What makes it easier to produce great sounding music with great speakers? Considering, and I'll throw out the red meat here. Considering that a lot of people are going to be listening to it on little plastic earbuds. You know,
this is you, bud.
Well, I mean, I feel like I am a first year student. In the scheme of the universe, but I've worked with some really amazing people, and I think you're sort of dividing into two categories. I think there's the listening experience three categories. There's the listening experience when you're making the music. So the way that you perceive the sound as a performer and also as an engineer in terms of the choices you make when you're recording the music. Then there's the mixing component, where the choices you make in terms of balancing that, and those are sort of connected because those are both probably happening in recording studios. And then there's the experience as a listener. And for me, those are three separate choices, or three separate areas. But having really good speakers in a well-tuned environment, there is nothing that substitutes for it. And as I get older, I realize that there is no black box, there is no magic thing that you knob that you turn and it makes the music better. But having incredible speakers will enable each decision you make to be made better along the way. So I don't know if that's too vague or if that answers the question that you were asking.
No, I think you hit it on that last point where it's like there isn't a magic box that does it, but you hit a properly tuned environment. Like we're trying to, when you buy a hi-fi system, you're trying to recreate what happened in a room that's completely different than yours, and you're going to try to move the air in the same way. Like it's really, the perfect speaker doesn't exist and never will exist. We're just trying to get closer to it.
But I think that's what at least for me in a mixing environment, that's what like changed everything for me when I really took a step up to like truly great professional speakers, was the like translating to different places, is understanding the elements of the music enough that I can take it anywhere and it has similar properties to what I intended it to have here in my great sounding studio space, that I never felt like with lesser speakers I was able to sort of like listen to it anywhere, in the car, on my laptop, you know, anywhere, and have it be like, yeah, that's the idea. That's what I was trying to convey.
Perfect.
Spiker, is that an ADAT?
You know, if we're talking hi-fi, you have to mention ADAT. I was just working on a record, and we were chasing like a 90s sound, and I've had an ADAT since everyone had an ADAT and never sold it. And we bounced stems to the ADAT and brought it back in. And I can't tell you how much it did for making it sound like the 90s, like that weird side, kind of flat thing that it does. It was great. It did the thing. If anyone out there on the internet wants their tracks bounced to ADAT, $1 a track, send it over.
Amazing. I knew somebody was going to bring it back. I've been joking about it for years, and I'm
trying.
So happy that it's you.
I don't think it's going
to. Well, there's that famous Primal Scream record that was like, to me, is like the pinnacle of the 8-out, right? Like the Accelerator or whatever. Do you guys remember that record?
I mean,
really distorted one.
My old boss. I mean, that's what I, when I think of 8-outs, I think of Alanis Morissette.
Totally.
But I toured with her for 5 years, and
that's that sound.
That's that sound. I actually just listened to a podcast with Chris Fogel, who's a friend of mine, who's now mostly does film work. He's an amazing engineer. He was the engineer on that record, and he talked all about it. And he talked about the 8-outs and the Alesis DM5 presets and the Quadreverb presets, and it was a real walk down memory lane for what the height of technology was in 1995.
Hey, yeah. Seth.
What's up, man?
One thing to segue into from Spiker's point of translating from system to system, I don't know. I'm not totally sure. I might be going rogue here because I'm not sure if we're talking about this yet, but I want to. So
there are no rules. Go nuts.
We're actually getting back in the studio in about a month or so, maybe a little bit more, and we're going to make a new cut on the Bowers and Wilkins 800 D3s in the front, the 805s in the back, and we're going to do a stereo mix and a 5.1 mix. And the hope is that people that have like Bowers and Wilkins systems will hear like exactly what we intended, because we're going to track mix and master on that rig.
Dude, that's awesome. That's fantastic. That'll be a ton
of
fun.
So excited about that.
I am too, man. I can't wait to get back in.
Do you have any ideas on what it's what type of vibe you're chasing, or is this just going to be walk in and go?
Exactly. It's going to be four of these.
So that's
perfect. That's awesome. No, now, that's pretty cool.
The spirit of, like, I feel like what we do when we get into, and this is how the album was made, is we all just kind of sit down and start making stuff. I mean, we had zero plan when we made this album. For every single like track that you hear, the way it started was either Zach playing a figure on a synth, James playing drums, like maybe I was playing pedal steel or like had a thing going on my modular, and we just start going. Like, there's never a, hey, let's make something that sounds like this. We kind of just feed off of the inspiration, off of the vibe that's happening at the time, and we kind of stumble into things that we dig. And I bet I don't see us doing it a different way for whenever we get back together.
Please don't. That sounds like so much fun. It's to be a fly on the wall would be awesome. And like you said, if they've got the system, they can be that fly on the wall and they can hear it just a little bit after the fact, after you guys get to fiddle around with it and play with it. That's very cool.
Zach, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to talk a bit about this is for the nerds out there. But one of the things that we did when we were recording, We figured out a way to pass around an analog clock system around the room to all of us in real time, so that we were actually able to synchronize the different synth systems and James's electronic drum looping system. But it was all done with analog signals. So we would start kind of playing for a little while and kind of go, like once we maybe 10 minutes in, we're sort of like, we're into a mood. And Bill, who was the engineer at my old studio, would tap out kind of, all right, you guys are playing around 112 beats a minute. And then he would set up a couple things in the control room, and then he would turn it on and we would all start receiving a clock at the same tempo, so that my sequencer, that's an analog sequencer, and C-Ray's and James's analog electronic drum system would all kind of clock together, and we'd be able to start sort of building an electronic music, but we're doing it in real time live. And that was the sort of, for a lot of it, that was the master process. And then we would sink into that kind of tempo and mood for a long time, and And that's what ended up sort of forming the core of each of the pieces on the record. And I think we'll probably do something like that again. And
Yeah. Gotcha.
So you'll have another, you know, 8 hours of a hard drive to work through, John. So have fun with that.
For 3 minutes of music.
Yeah, exactly.
That's perfect. That's awesome. I can't wait to hear that. It's going to be a lot of fun. So this record is coming out on the 21st, right?
The 21st, yeah.
Yes, sir.
That's a lot of fun. Where can people go get this record?
Anywhere online. I mean, it'll be on all the streaming services. You name it, it'll be there.
Digital, all the digital platforms. I recommend Tidal because it's the highest fidelity one, in my opinion. But you can your mileage may vary, your subscriptions may vary.
Mm-hmm. I don't. There's new players in the game. Well, there's Kobuz is new, isn't it?
Yeah, Kobuz is bringing it, man. It's native high resolution, so
cool.
You don't have to get into any of the. This very specific compression algorithm that Tidal's using.
All right.
I always recommend don't choose, just get them all because it's a ton of fun to have multiple platforms. But yeah, you definitely named my two favorite to listen to with the best quality. That's awesome.
I wanted to set an accurate expectation if anybody tunes in for the live stream or if they end up listening to the album later, like. We love high fidelity. We love hi-fi. Like we want it to sound, you know, amazing and big and to do all of the things that we want it to do. But I feel like there's a certain kind of person who considers themselves like a hi-fi enthusiast mm-hmm. that's looking for pristine. Like they want to hear the piano sound as pristine and like as real and present as possible. Or they want to hear that acoustic guitar just sound like it's in their face. And that's not really what we did on this album. Like
this is not Austin Krauss and Union Station. No.
Yeah, and also like for me, that entire kind of like ethos around hi-fi, I kind of want to push back against. Like I don't think that the goal is to hear things as natural as they can sound. I mean, modern production techniques have evolved so much. Instrumentation has evolved so much. Like what we can do with synthesis now and sampling and resampling has affected the way we make music to such a degree that hearing that kind of like pristine piano or the orchestra is still super fun and rad. And I'm not knocking that at all because I still love to do that. But I don't think that's really the definition of like the hi-fi experience. To me, it's the listener hearing what the creator intended. And, you know, like for our last single that we came out with a week or so ago, I Am Thoughts, like the drums are crispy as hell. It's just like they're super crispy. There's, you know, there's distortion happening, and then the piano is just smashed.
That's awesome.
You know, it's like those are decisions that we made. Like we want it to sound like that.
Make this piano sound like it doesn't belong here. That's perfect. That's awesome.
I think that you know, now that we're in like a postmodern era of music where like you've gone through 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you've gone through sampling, you've gone through hip hop, you've gone through electronic music. The beginnings of electronic music into what it is now. And I think, you know, it's like one of the instruments that I used on the record and something that's fascinated me since I was a teenager, you know, and a lot of people love this is the Mellotron, which is one of the first samplers. And the first versions of it played back sounds off of tapes. And then there's a new version that is a digital version of that. That I used on our record, and a lot of people are using, and I think people are fascinated by it still because the recordings were made in one era and sound like samples even when you're just playing them real time, and like that song, like I Am Thoughts, that's an acoustic piano, but it was something that we thought, well, what if we make this sound like it's been sampled off of an old jazz record in real time with the tools in the studio, with the distortion and the compression and the filtering. And the drums are sort of made to sound almost like you took a sample of a drummer playing and slowed it down. So they sound unnaturally deep and spongy and kind of,
yeah,
but it's done in real time. And that was a very conscious choice. And I think that choices like that, a lot of the records that really inspire us people are making choices like that, whether they're doing it in the same ways we are or in totally different ways. And I think that we're in an era where it's anything is possible. And there's a lot of really exciting stuff happening with Fidelity, both high and mid and low.
No, you just, it sounds, you sound like you just described like a Beck record where you have those old samples from a variety of different places intermingled with all these new modern techniques that just give you that sense. Well, I think it, listeners are getting smarter, man. They understand where things are coming from sampling wise, and they can hear those older samples and appreciate it dubbed into and used with new more modern techniques that are a little bit cleaner. I don't think that takes away. I just think it gives it more layers and more texture, and it's more interesting. That's really cool. That's
absolutely
awesome.
Absolutely. One of our favorite engineers, Chad Blake, who sort of at one point in time was anachronistic and seemed like he was making a lot of very kind of distorted, strange recordings within pop music, you know, sort of quote unquote pop music. And he was asked about that, and he's like, no, I'm not trying to make lo-fi recordings. The thing that interests me is the contrast in fidelity. It's like, what happens when you have, a lo-fi guitar, but a very hi-fi vocal, or a lo-fi drum sound that's distorted, but you can hear the voice very clearly in front of it. And it's, you know, and that's like sort of comes out of the art world. Like, what if you take
a
photograph and a clothes hanger sculpted into a form, and you put it on one canvas, and I think that's always what I'm trying to go for in recordings. And having, it sort of ties back to the thing of like having great speakers, like the hi-fi speakers, is you hear the hi-fi, and then you hear this detail on the lo-fi, the distortion, the filters. And you hear that really clearly, and you hear that contrast. You know, it's like looking at a piece of composite art, but without the glass smudging it. You know, you see it right up close, and you see all that detail, the dirt, as well as the sort of beauty.
Yeah, I don't want to let too much of the cat out of the bag, but we use a Rage Against the Machine cut at work all the time, where, you know, Morel just ripping your face, really distorted, and it's at just the left channel, it's really kind of coarse, and people, you see their faces, they kind of just go like, oh, this isn't all that great. And then those big fat drums and bass come in, and just their hair blows back, and the looks on their face, it brings drama to whatever you're listening to. That contrast, I think it's awesome. That's my favorite thing to show off. So that's really cool. So yeah, this sounds like it's going to be a ton of fun to listen to, and not sit there, you know, with your expensive scotch and sit there and dial into the absolute high fidelity. It sounds like it's just going to be a fun ass record, man. This sounds like it's going to be a really, really cool
what experience. You just described sounds like fun too, though, just for the record.
I do that all the time at home. Pour a glass of scotch, put on like Bill Evans Live at the Village Vanguard on vinyl with like, and just sort of like, listen to like how beautiful the sound is of that music recorded from that era, and like drink my scotch. I do that all the time, but it's, you know, it's also fun to put on some other crazy shit.
I don't know what it is about Village Vanguard. There's a ton of good stuff coming out of that place. There's a ton of great sounding recordings at Village Vanguard Live. That's fun, man. Perfect.
Yeah, those are emotional things. I think that's what it all is, right? I feel like if it brings emotion, then that's sounds can do that. The balance of dark and light can do that. All that stuff. It's like just, you know, flavor, different flavors. It's all about like making something that, you know, affects you some way, you know.
Yep.
That kind of pulls you in. So that's what I'm shooting for.
The whole emotional music and the contrast.
Yeah, something that pulls you into it.
That's awesome, guys. Well, dudes, thank you so much for
thank you
for coming on. Yeah, this is a ton of fun for me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
No, it was my pleasure. Go listen to their album. It's gonna be sick. It's gonna be a ton of fun.
Hang out with us on Thursday night.
Yeah, absolutely. On your social media accounts or your website, how are you getting the link out? How can they find that event?
We'll be posting it on the Ghost Leota Instagram link, which is @ghost_Leota. And we'll be posting it from our personal accounts as well. I'll send it over to you too. I don't know how you guys post this interview, but maybe if there's a spot to tag it, that would be rad as well.
Definitely. Definitely do that.
So yeah.
Awesome, dudes. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Oh man. Thanks. Thanks again. Nice to meet you all and see you next time.
Yeah, look forward to
it. Thanks for having us.
Thank you once again for listening to the Bowers & Wilkins podcast, and a special thank you to Ghost Leota for joining us today. Have a great day.